You're listening to a Holyfield podcast.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to Alternate Jersey, the podcast that reimagines your favorite sport moments to find out what could have happened. I'm your host and omnipotent space worm, Grant Evan. We just experienced a very special Sunday of football. Special in a wide variety of ways. Special for fans of the Rams that get to see their team back in the Super Bowl after nearly a two-decade absence. For fans of the Patriots, they once again get to march into their offices in an air of superiority. And for fans of good officiating, it's special in a different kind of way. Well, if nothing else, they'll make for great future episodes. But Super Bowls are tricky things to come by. Every team has to make the right decisions to even have a shot at the biggest stage in sports. And even after that, you have to win all the right games, make all the right plays, sign all the right players, benefit from all the right calls, avoid all the right injuries, the list goes on and on. Needless to say, there's always something we can change that affects the teams that make it. Even New England. But today, we're going to start by looking at the Los Angeles Rams. You may recall that during the preseason after the Rams made their grand move to Los Angeles, they made a few changes. They didn't have a clear answer at quarterback after shipping Sam Bradford off to Philly in exchange for Nick Foles. Foles' campaign with the Rams left a lot to be desired, as the once hotshot Philadelphia Eagle went 4-7 with the Rams, throwing for just 7 touchdowns against 10 interceptions. The Rams were still stuck in the QB purgatory they've been trapped in since Kurt Warner left, and they made a drastic change. After sending their first-round pick, both of their seconds, and their third-round pick from 2016, along with their first and third-round picks from 2017 to the Titans, the Rams moved up in the 2016 draft to take the number one pick and select Jared Goff, their now Super Bowl starting quarterback. After sitting behind Case Keenum for most of 2016, Goff has blossomed as a starter, making the playoffs in both of his starter years and now one game away from hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. But what if Tennessee didn't accept LA's trade? We'll start off by saying the Titans are most certainly not in the quarterback market, as they just acquired Marcus Mariota the year before. With the Titans locked in at 1 and the Eagles still needing a quarterback since Sam Bradford was clearly not the answer they had hoped for, the Eagles still make their blockbuster trade with Cleveland to launch up to the number 2 pick. With that cleared up, we'll have to establish who the Titans are taking at number 1. The predominant theory for draft analysts before the big LA trade was that the Titans were going after an offensive lineman, and the man for the job was clearly going to be Mississippi tackle Laramie Tunsil. But then a video surfaced minutes before the draft, showcasing Tunsil hitting a bong strapped to a gas mask, and that sent his draft stock plummeting. The consensus second best tackle in the draft would be Ronnie Stanley, who in our real world went 6th overall to Baltimore, so now he's moving up and making that sweet first round pick level money. This leaves the Eagles at number 2, able to take their number 1 choice at quarterback, Jared Goff. We know the Eagles made an attempt to move to number 1, but were outbid by Los Angeles. But we also know the Eagles were always planning to take whoever LA didn't take, so we know they'd be happy with both quarterbacks. With the Rams no longer a threat, Goff is wide open to take at number 2. So all eyes now turn to Carson Wentz to see where he'll be landing. Our first candidate is Dallas, who have a frequently injured Tony Romo under center and did end up taking a quarterback in Dak Prescott during this draft, so we know they're in the market, but thanks to Elite Draft Board, we know exactly who Dallas wanted more than anyone, and that's Ezekiel Elliott. So no Wentz for Dallas, as their big pick is still on the board. Jacksonville is a possibility, but opinions on Bortles were still very wait and see, so Wentz will fall past the Jags. Ravens are still content with Flacco at this time, and then next up are the 49ers, which seems like a great fit in hindsight, but remember that Colin Kaepernick had yet to begin his anthem protests, and the potential trade to Denver had fallen through. Now keep your eyes on the Browns, who are now picking at number 8, since Tennessee has no need to trade up now that they've got their man. The Browns just had another miserable season. Manziel is a confirmed bust, Josh McCown is not the stopgap they had hoped for, Mike Pettine has been fired in favor of former Bengals offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson, and it's very clear you need a quarterback. In fact, if his exit interviews are to be believed, we know full well that Hugh Jackson wanted Carson Wentz. So, with the 8th overall pick, the Cleveland Browns select Carson Wentz from North Dakota, allowing them to have their cake and eat it too. The Dolphins will still take Tunsil at 13, since apparently they already knew about the video, which sends would-be Titan tackle Jack Conklin to Detroit. That leaves us with all-important question of who LA plans to take with pick number 15. If you do some research, you quickly learn that the Rams are planning on going quarterback some way, somehow in this draft. We talk very heavily about the big two in this draft with Goff and Wentz, but you may recall that there was a third quarterback being highly touted in this draft, and even went to the first round, Paxton Lynch. There's even considerable evidence to suggest the Rams liked Paxton Lynch quite a lot, so now the original plan goes through, and the Rams move forward with Lynch at 15. Moving into the 2016 season, we'll go ahead and look over the Rams for now, since the story will be about the same. Taking a QB in the first ruffled Foles' feathers, and he'll be traded away to Kansas City again to back up Alex Smith. Lynch still backs up Keenum, and our new focus will be on the Eagles and Browns, since our top two quarterbacks are now fighting for new squads. First up, Goff as an Eagle. We know Goff is getting the start because the Vikings are still trading for Bradford. We don't have a full season to go off of with Goff under center in his rookie season, but we do know a few things. As a Ram, Goff went 0-7, throwing for 5 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Granted, this was the final act of the Jeff Fisher era, and Goff had been benched for half the year. We also have to keep in mind that Goff's receiving cash was nothing like it is in Philadelphia. Kenny Britt was his leading receiver. Kenny Britt. So we'll cut him some slack. With a full year and a marginally better coach to work with than Doug Peterson, and at least 2 decent pass catchers between Zach Ertz and Jordan Matthews, we can give the Eagles a nice and comfy 5-11 record, once again wrapping up with a 4th place finish in the NFC East. As for Wentz's Browns, Cleveland sees an immediate improvement with the North Dakota alumnus under center. The 1-15 season of our reality is but a distant memory as the Browns get off to a great start by beating Goff's Eagles. How do I know Wentz is an improvement, you may ask? For starters, Wentz as an Eagle got 16 touchdowns against 14 interceptions, running the full season, leading Philly to 7 wins. The Browns started 3 different quarterbacks, who combined for just 15 touchdowns. The only problem, though, is that Wentz's primary target is going to be Terrell Pryor, but this is 2016 Pryor, the one-hit wonder of a receiver who gained 1,000 yards under, again, 3 quarterbacks. So assuming Wentz is better than McCown, Kessler, Griffin III, and for a brief moment Terrell Pryor as a quarterback, we can safely give Cleveland a 5-11 record as well, including a 3-0 start to the year. The seasons of Goff, Wentz, and very briefly Lynch don't impact the 2016 playoff picture whatsoever. Atlanta still blows their historic 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, and we barrel through into the 2017 draft. We will need to change the draft order a bit with Cleveland no longer being the number one pick. Now, the 49ers have the number one pick secured, with Chicago right behind them. Philly will be picking at 7th, the LA Chargers at 8, and Cleveland at 9. Cleveland ended up beating both those teams in the regular season, and the tiebreaker between Philly and LA allows for the Eagles to take the high pick. The good news for Chicago fans is you don't need to sell the farm to wind up drafting Mitchell Trubisky, because the Niners obviously take generational defender Myles Garrett with the number one pick. The Eagles pick 7th and still have needed defensive end, so they still go with Derek Barnett, and the Chargers still take top receiver Mike Williams, but the Browns now have an eye at helping out their young quarterback. So instead of getting Myles Garrett, the Browns decide to add some help by getting dual threat Christian McCaffrey in their backfield. The even better news is the Browns have their quarterback now, so they have no need to take DeShone Kizer in the second. No, the high-ceiling, low-floor Notre Dame quarterback falls down to the 3rd round to become Eli Manning's heir apparent. Which brings us to 2017. Our real world brought great success to our main star quarterbacks. Goff and the Rams took the 3rd seed, Wentz's Eagles grabbed a 13-3 record, and Wentz looked like an MVP favorite up until his ACL injury in Week 14. But now, Goff is on that high-flying Eagles team, Wentz has the weight of Cleveland expectations squarely on his shoulder, and new head coach Sean McVay has to move forward with Paxton Lynch as his quarterback. It's hard to speculate on Paxton Lynch. During his time in Denver, he's had to back up the likes of Trevor Siemian and Case Keenum with not many starts to go off of. With a total of 4 games played of the 1-3 record, it's safe to say Denver's coaches didn't have a lot of faith in him. So I took it upon myself to compare some game film between Lynch and 2017 Goff, and then comparing some 2016 Goff to 2017 Goff. It's pretty apparent why Goff was a number one pick. Goff has better pocket presence, scans the defense better, and is a touch more mobile when given the chance. His mechanics definitely tighten up with McVay as his coach, as well as the diversity of plays the Rams attempt compared to when Fisher was in charge. Paxton's main problems are decision-making, which is a similar problem Goff had in 2016 and continues to struggle with, but nearly not as much with McVay on the headset. So we can deduce that Paxton is worse than Goff, but can improve under McVay. With Paxton under center, we hand the Rams 4 more losses, dropping them from an 11-5 record to a 7-9 record, which is still a vast improvement from the previous season of a 4-12 as the Rams continue to find their identity. Goff's Eagles are poised for a run. One of my personal favorite things about Jared Goff is his sense of responsibility. After going 0-7 in LA, he promised the entire fan base in a press junket that he would, quote, get fixed. I'll give everything in my heart and soul to get it fixed. Now, imagine he gives that speech to a Philly fan base. Now imagine he gets the weapons the 2017 Eagles had to roll with. Now remember that Goff doesn't get hurt like Wentz did in 2017. Now real-world Goff throws 5 fewer touchdowns than Wentz, but he also didn't have Ertz, Alshon Jeffrey, and a suddenly revitalized Nelson Aguilar to throw to. We'll give the Goff goals a 13-3 record after receiving an early loss to the Chargers, but picking up that season finale win against Dallas. Definitely enough to secure the number one seed without even needing Nick Foles to take over. And now for some happy things to come out of the factory of sadness. Let's start off by canceling that 0-16 parade, because no way does Wentz let that happen. With a real-world 33 touchdown performance against 7 interceptions, Cleveland in no way has to endure the great Kaiser meltdown as the Browns pick up 6 whole wins, including a routing of the Steelers in Weeks 1 and 17. So, with all that addressed, let's talk playoffs. The NFC picture is a bit different as the Rams exit bump Seattle up to the 4th seed, but in the AFC, the Steelers have absorbed 2 more losses, but an 11-5 finish is still good enough to grab the AFC second seed, so since the AFC remains unchanged, we'll go ahead and skip them and book the Patriots another Super Bowl trip. The NFC picture, however, now looks like this. Number 1, Philadelphia Eagles. Number 2, Minnesota Vikings. Number 3, New Orleans Saints. Number 4, Seattle Seahawks. Number 5, Carolina Panthers. Number 6, Atlanta Falcons. Saints vs. Falcons still ends with a NOLA victory, but the Panthers have the absolute luck of drawing a weakening Seahawks team, and given that they already beat out our real-world Rams, it stands to reason they win again. Divisional round matchups are largely the same. Vikings will benefit from the Minneapolis Miracle, while Goff's Eagles hang on to survive against the Falcons, bringing us to our very same conference championship with Minnesota storming into Philly. It's Keenum vs. Goff! Vikings fans may be getting sad out the gate as many had no answer for the Eagles' defense, and Nick Foles just laid waste to the Vikes. But let's all recall that such a major shift at quarterback can completely change a team's identity. After plugging Goff into the Eagles' offense and running our standard 10 simulations, I've got some news for you. The Vikings are going to the Super Bowl. Goff proves too inexperienced, and the home-game-hungry Vikings' defense proves too mighty for the second-year quarterback. The Vikings go to their 5th Super Bowl, becoming the first team to ever have home field advantage in the big game. They're sniffing for that first win. The Patriots look to defend their title and hope that the call of the Super Bowl is enough to dilute the Vikings fan base. Once again, with incredibly serious decisions like this, we turn to the simulations. And after running our tests, we have a clear and decisive victory. For the home team, the Minnesota Vikings win the Super Bowl. This brings us to 2018 and the ever-looming question of what Minnesota now does with Super Bowl champion Case Keenum. Clearly they're able to win with him and decided to take a 1-year gamble on him to keep the magic going. This means they don't go after Kirk Cousins in free agency, since they're no longer just a quarterback away from glory, and instead, the big-armed Washington quarterback has his pick of the Jets, Broncos, and Cardinals, who, as we know, all offered the talent contracts around the same time. We can use the Cousins tactic of choose the team with the most money to help dictate where he ends up signing, so welcome to the New York Jets, Kirk! This throws off the quarterbacks taken in 2018 by quite a bit. With Cleveland now a 6-10 win team, they are once again way out of range for the number one pick. The Browns are now sandwiched at pick 10, a pick they used to take Calvin Ridley to help out Carson Wentz. With the pass now behind us and the order rearranged, we now have a much, much, much different image of what our current NFL looks like. First and foremost, the Giants are now picking at number one. The Giants have talked about how they would take Barkley every time, no matter the circumstances, but we do know that there was one player the New York Giants had ranked above Saquon Barkley on their draft board, and that was Baker Mayfield. And the ride doesn't stop here. With the Jets winning the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes, they are not picking after the Giants anymore. No need to trade up to two, since the Colts are still picking at number two and are able to get their preferred pick, Saquon Barkley. The Jets instead anchor their defense with Bradley Chubb, leaving the Broncos to finally get a great addition to their depleted secondary with Denzel Ward. The Bills will still contact the Buccaneers for a trade so they can get their guy at quarterback, but they will still be taking Josh Allen. We have learned in the aftermath of the draft that even with Darnold or Rosen still on the board, the Bills wanted Allen for his cold game weather readiness. Meaning, when the Cardinals trade up with Oakland to take their quarterback, instead of the chosen Rosen, they'll be taking Sam Darnold, the higher-rated draft prospect. So what of Josh Rosen and Lamar Jackson? In our real world, the Ravens ended up trading down until they hit pick 32 to take Lamar Jackson. But now, the Ravens still have the number 16 pick, and Josh Rosen is still on the board, and the team sitting at 32, the Vikings, have no plans to trade out of that pick, since they're in need of a backup plan in case Case Keenum doesn't strike twice. In addition, the Ravens have the Patriots, Bengals, and Steelers to worry about, as those franchises may be on the search for a safety net for their aging or middling quarterbacks. So, Josh Rosen is taken by Baltimore to back up Joe Flacco. Lamar Jackson is still passed up by all those teams who passed on him before, but now Minnesota goes quarterback instead of cornerback and takes Lamar Jackson. How do these changes affect our current season? For one, Carson Wentz now has a full team to operate with and much more experience than the occasionally shaky Mayfield. The AFC North is completely shaken up by Wentz's strong new team as he leads them to an easy 11-5 record. Rosen's Ravens don't get their shot at playoff glory, as Rosen does not have the insane mobility of Jackson that saved them so many times after Joe Flacco went down with an injury. So the Browns not only have a good enough record to get the playoffs, but they snag their first division title since 2002. Barkley in Indianapolis is a revelation. The Colts' slow start never happens, as Barkley's leg saved them from the close losses against Jacksonville and Philly, and leads the Colts to an overtime win against Houston, putting them at a 13-3 record and the Texans at a 10-6 record. Keenum has his inevitable drop-off, and the Vikings turn to Jackson in Week 5 after Keenum goes 0-4 to the Niners, Packers, Bills, and the Paxton Lynch-led Rams. Jackson has a much stronger supporting cast in many than he does in Baltimore, so we can assume he'd have a few stronger numbers than he would in our world. As a starter for 6 games as a Raven, Lamar threw for 5 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and a little under 1,000 yards. As a rusher, Lamar scored 2 more touchdowns and ran for just shy of 500 yards. Seeing as how he's getting the Week 5 start with the likes of Diggs and Thielen to throw to, and a banged-up run game behind him, we can at least double those numbers and add some extra numbers taking into account some weaker defenses, and we're talking about 12 starts instead of 6. Now, comparing those numbers to what Kirk Cousins was able to do, it doesn't immediately bode well for Minnesota. Cousins threw for 30 touchdowns against just 10 interceptions. So that's going to be a bit better than what Lamar Jackson could theoretically do for that team in his rookie year after sitting behind Case Keenum for a month. Needless to say, the addition of Lamar Jackson does not give the Vikings the extra push they need to beat Chicago, so the Vikes finish with a 6-10 record. Kirk Cousins is on improvements in New York, where Vikings fans felt cheated after going from 13-3 to 8-7-1 in our world. The Jets are more than happy not to go 4-12 again. Cousins threw for more touchdowns and fewer interceptions than the entire Jets quarterback group, so the Jets improved to a 9-7 record. As for Baker Mayfield, he does not see the field at all in 2018 while backing up Eli Manning. Without Barkley to bail them out those handful of times, the Giants now secure another number one pick, their quarterback of the future, and a much more precarious position for aging Eli. Goff and the Eagles are still going to the playoffs. Without Wentz's injury bothering him at the beginning of the year, a healthy Goff is able to secure that essential win over the Buccaneers, giving the Eagles a 10-6 record, but still lose the tiebreaker to the Cowboys, so the Eagles grab a wildcard appearance. As for Paxton's Rams, Lynch has to come in pretty clutch to get the 5 wins that Goff did during the middle of the season. Lynch isn't going to do that. Again, we don't have great numbers on Paxton. He could be great, he could be a bust. We only know Denver wasn't impressed, and now he's being looked at as a backup option. We will still give Paxton 1 win in a game where the pass wasn't as needed during that 5-game close game road stretch, the one against Green Bay. So knock 4 wins off the Rams record, and LA finishes with an improved but not impressive 9-7 record, but that 9-7 record is just good enough to snag the number 6 seed in the NFC. Now, let's talk playoffs. In the NFC, we have number 1 the New Orleans Saints, number 2 the Chicago Bears, number 3 the Seattle Seahawks, number 4 the Dallas Cowboys, number 5 the Philadelphia Eagles, and number 6 the Los Angeles Rams. Our real-world Super Bowl representatives fall to the Seahawks in the first round, while Goff's Eagles continue to struggle against the Cowboys. No block kick to save the day here for Philly, the Cowboys advance. Thus, Seattle goes up to Chicago to take on the deadly Bears defense, a game you may recall the Bears had already won in the regular season. After running our sims, we push the Bears onto the championship round, while the Saints dispatch Dallas in a bout of revenge for a regular season loss. That leaves the Bears to travel to NOLA to take on Breeze's boys. These simulations have wavered dramatically, to the point where after doing 10 sims, we were left with a 5-5 split. So we ran an extra 10. After doing that, we can officially erase the blown call from the collective memory of Louisiana, as the Saints are back in the Super Bowl after a 10-year hiatus. Now, on to the AFC. Number 1, the Indianapolis Colts. Number 2, the Kansas City Chiefs. Number 3, the New England Patriots. Number 4, the Cleveland Browns. Number 5, the Los Angeles Chargers. And number 6, the Houston Texans. The Pats send Houston packing with no problem, so no big shakeup here, but now we turn our eyes to a new, successful Browns squad taking on a hot, rising Chargers squad. We know the Chargers weren't exactly gangbusters against the Ravens with a few exposable problems, but we also don't want to get too caught up in the desire of wanting the Browns to succeed to make the wrong call. So, we plug in our new stats, new players, make our adjustments, run our simulations, and get this! The Browns, with all the proper math behind them, move on to the divisional round. The Patriots get another battle with Kansas City, which they win once again, and Cleveland takes on the Colts. The magic for the up-and-coming Browns squad ends here, as the Colts offense blasts through the still-young defense. Now Indy has to host the quote-unquote washed-up Patriots. Now, we could do some transitive property work to reason, oh, well, Colts lost the Chiefs, Chiefs lost the Patriots, Patriots win. But remember that Indy now has something KC didn't have, and the Chargers didn't get a chance to use. An incredible running attack. We are going to run our simulations yet again with all our fun new stats, and in the end, it is the Indianapolis Colts who come out on top and are back in the Super Bowl after a 10-year hiatus. Hey, wait, that sounds familiar. Instead of a 2002 rematch, we get ourselves a 2009 rematch between the Saints and the Colts. And much like that great battle in 2009 between a seasoned veteran with a Super Bowl win taking on a young, promising squad with a quarterback chasing a redemption story, our story favors the youth, and the Colts win the Super Bowl. If the Rams do not take Goff, they have a longer, tougher road to the Super Bowl, and the football world gets to see the Vikings win a Super Bowl with Case Keenum and Andrew Luck have the single greatest comeback season in NFL history. Rams fans, he may not be the flashiest quarterback in the league, but be sure to thank your lucky stars for Jared Goff this weekend. Now, let's mess things up for New England. First, a bit of personal backstory. I've done alternate jersey in a written capacity for about 3 years, and every year I like to look into the Super Bowl to dig apart a key crucial decision that topples a team from their perch. Every single year I've done this, I've had to deeply analyze the Patriots. I reversed the Malcolm Butler interception. I even went back so far as to keep Drew Bledsoe healthy. I spent countless nights poring over draft classes, close games, Super Bowls, blown calls, anything that's toppled this empire for a third year in a row, and it was exhausting. But this year we're doing something different. We're doing the ultimately unthinkable, but for a few brief months in 2017, it did seem like a real possibility. We are going to humor the craziest of the crazy trade rumors that ever happened. We're trading away Tom Brady. In 2017, there seemed to be some bizarre rumors turning out of Foxborough. It started with an offhanded remark from Brady that he felt he could be traded out of New England. Naturally, we all speculated and postulated, but never fully believed it could happen. Then, right on the day of the trade deadline, Brady's heir apparent, Jimmy Garoppolo, was sent off to the 49ers to be their new franchise quarterback, and Brady, of course, led the Pats back to the Super Bowl, only to be thwarted by the Eagles. However, in the aftermath of that trade, we have learned a juicy tidbit from the Niners GM, John Lynch. He didn't ask about Jimmy G first. He called Belichick to inquire about Tom Brady. I lean a lot on the many worlds interpretation for the sake of this show, you'll notice. The premise that every choice that is made in this world creates an alternate universe where the opposite is true. The theory that all possibilities are real, that if Tom Brady was unavailable for trade in this world, there must be another where he was. So let us peer into that dimension and answer the question, what if the New England Patriots traded Tom Brady to the San Francisco 49ers? Let's establish a trade value for Tom Terrific first. Brady is 41, but he's got 5 Lombardis in his trophy case. Brady may be butting heads with his head coach, but he has more postseason wins than any other quarterback. Brady has been accused of being a washed-up system quarterback and also a cheater, but Jimmy G has an injury history. So here's the deal. The Patriots are going to get the exact same thing for Brady that they got for Jimmy G, a second-round pick. But they'll add the stipulation that the second can turn into a first if by some miracle Brady gets the 49ers to the playoffs. When the 49ers pulled the trigger on the Jimmy trade, they were sitting at an 0-8 record. Playoffs were not on the brain, but Brady ain't no quitter. The Patriots, by contrast, are 6-2 when they are officially now beginning the Jimmy Garoppolo era. So we'll begin by discussing that home stretch for Jimmy. Brady would finish the year in New England going 7-1, which is a tall order for somebody who's only played in 2 games, though Jimmy G did go 5-0 with the Niners in his time as a starter. But we'll be a little realistic here. Let's say the Pats lose their grand debut against Denver as Garoppolo has insufficient time to prep for that defense, but he will go 4 straight against Oakland, Miami twice, and then Buffalo. Jimmy's next loss comes at the hands of the Steelers, who don't have to worry about being robbed of Jesse James' touchdown, but then a 2-0 finish allows the new era Patriots to go 12-4 instead of 13-3. This gives New England the number 2 seed behind a now 14-2 Steelers. Brady, on the other hand, goes apeshit in San Francisco. Tom Brady anchors his MVP case by winning all 8 remaining games, including knocking Arizona and Seattle down in the division rankings. Instead of a 6-10 fourth place finish, the Niners now grab an 8-8 second place NFC West finish. The NFC South prevents them from making the playoffs, but you can almost hear the collective butts of the NFC clinch when they see Brady play like this. Nevertheless, Tom Brady misses the playoffs and the Niners keep their first rounder. The NFC playoff picture is not changed at all as a result of Tom's tear, so we'll keep Foles and the Eagles of Destiny in the Super Bowl, but as for the AFC, our new seeding is number 1 the Pittsburgh Steelers, number 2 the New England Patriots, number 3 the Jacksonville Jaguars, number 4 the Kansas City Chiefs, number 5, the Tennessee Titans, and number 6, the Buffalo Bills. Our divisions go just the same as they did in our real world, with the Jags and Titans moving on. Who their targets are ends up vastly different, though. The Jags are now facing the Patriots a week early, and the Titans take on Pittsburgh. The Steeler offense blows the plucky Titans out of the water, but the Jaguars' almost victory against Tom Brady turns into an assured victory against the yet unproven Garoppolo. So the Jaguars end up going to Pittsburgh for the AFC Championship, and we already know how well Jacksonville does in Pittsburgh in the playoffs. The Jaguars are going to the Super Bowl. Nick Foles now has to take down the potential one-hit wonders of the Jaguar defense, and it proves to be an ultimately harder task than taking on the struggling Patriot defense. Foles does have one advantage, though. The Jaguars are starting Blake Bortles at quarterback still. Sounds like a job for simulations. In a rather handy victory, and with several assists from Leonard Fournette, Jacksonville wins the Super Bowl. We don't have to re-scramble the quarterback class in 2018, as the only two quarterbacks we have to worry about are in New England and San Francisco, neither of whom made any real moves to bolster their quarterback class in this draft. Although I will note to Jaguar fans, Blake Bortles is now a Super Bowl champion, so you shell out more money in his contract re-signing, and the possibility of trading him goes severely down. So, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry for your victory. Into our current year, beware the 49ers. Tom Brady starts out dismantling Cousins Vikings, and it just gets worse from there. On paper, Brady has some really great weapons to work with, a budding running back in Breida and proven veteran in Alfred Morris, a much healthier and arguably better tight end in George Kittle, a receiver core made up of Marquise Goodwin, Pierre Garçon, and big deep threat Dante Pettis. That is, until half the offense gets blasted due to injury. Looking through the Niners' schedule, taking all these factors into consideration, and remembering that Tom Brady is some kind of avocado-fueled machine person, the Niners wind up with a commanding 13-3 record, good enough to snatch the number one seed from New Orleans and bump the defending NFC champion Eagles out of the playoffs. As for the Jimmy G-triots, the promising young man leads New England to a respectable 10-6 record and yet another AFC East title. But it does bump the Patriots out of having a first-round bye in these playoffs. So, without further ado, let's get into the scrambled 2018 playoff picture. In the NFC, we've got the San Francisco 49ers at number 1, number 2 the New Orleans Saints, number 3 the Chicago Bears, number 4 the Dallas Cowboys, number 5 the Los Angeles Rams, and number 6 the Seattle Seahawks. The Rams are able to hold off the Cowboys in the first round, while Chicago sends Seattle backpacking. That sends the Bears to New Orleans, while the Rams face off against their division rivals for a shot at revenge. A healthy Rams offense on full blast take advantage of their depleted defense, and the Rams' pass rush limits Brady as the wild card advances to the NFC Championship against the Saints. We know the Bears lose to NOLA in our other timeline, and with no real difference to point to, we end up with the exact same NFC Championship we had in our real world. And again, with no discernible difference, we assume the refs blow the blatant PI call, and the Rams waltz into the Super Bowl as a wild card seed. In the AFC, our number one seed is the Kansas City Chiefs, the number 2 Houston Texans, number 3 the New England Patriots, number 4, Baltimore Ravens, number 5, LA Chargers, and number 6, the Indianapolis Colts. Instead of the Texans, the Colts now draw New England. Taking Brady out of the equation does complicate things, so looking into our simulations, we see that a Jimmy G-led offense is enough to handle the Colts secondary, so the Pats advance to the divisional round, while LA still beats Baltimore. Now the Chargers take on their rivals in Kansas City, while the Patriots travel to Houston. In our simulations, the Chargers have a repeat performance of their showdown late in the year against KC, while Jimmy G lays an egg against the powerful defense of Houston. And listen, like, don't blame me, blame the simulation machines. I know that sounds crazy, but it happens. That pits the rising Chargers up against the tough Texans, and since everything is so different here, we once again turn to our magic simulation box, and what do you know, looks like we've got ourselves an all-LA Super Bowl as the Chargers punch their ticket to Atlanta. in a dramatic battle of fifth seeds squarely representing SoCal in the ATL, with two great running backs, a young rising quarterback Goff taking on the long overdue quarterback Rivers, and two defenses with vastly different strengths. It's a game for the ages, an instant classic, and according to our simulations, the first ever Lombardi for the Los Angeles Chargers. With Brady as a Niner, their immediate future looks set as long as his supporting cast doesn't all die. Jimmy G has some growing pains, but the Patriot dynasty seems to continue to be a possibility as long as Belichick keeps coaching. Most importantly, though, Brady switching conferences gives us two first-time Super Bowl champions and much, much more open playing field in the AFC. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what could have happened if the Titans refused the Rams and the Patriots traded Tom Brady. How do you feel? Do you agree? Disagree? Feel free to let me know. Share this episode and get your friends in on the conversation. You can shout me out or call me out on Twitter at GrantEvanAJ. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time with another jersey and another story.